Good morning, everyone. Today's daf in Yavama's daf Chafeg. Okay, yesterday we made up some excellent ground. We are on Chav Dalin. I'll be the Amaral, but okay, it's a good start. Okay, grabbing a Chumash. Thank you, Lubin Foundation, for the sponsorship of the daf. Daf of the Melazer, Chumash Masoros, and Zolzman. We are on a Mishnah, now discussing a general topic when it comes to the mitzvah of Yibum, which was asked this question a number of times already since we started the Masechta, but not today's Mishnah. We're going to answer the question. Who gets to do the mitzvah of Yibum? If there's one surviving brother, that's not much of a question. So that means there's Ezekiel with one brother, and he'll do the mitzvah of Yibum. But if there's more than one brother, so who does the mitzvah of Yibum? So that is not clearly expressed in the Torah. The Torah, when describing the mitzvah of Yibum, just simply says that one of the brothers will do it, but the pasuk itself simple pshat on the pasuk makes no clear indication of who is the one responsible for the mitzvah of Yibum. So we start with the Mishnah, or in Chavdalam and Aleph, and the Mishnah writes, Mitzvah begadol yabim, the mitzvah is on the gadol. Gadol meaning the oldest of the brothers. Now, not necessarily the bechor, which we'll talk about later this morning, but we're talking about just simply whoever's the oldest, whoever the oldest surviving brother is, so that's the mitzvah. That's the primary obligation to do the mitzvah of Yibum. V'imkidim akatum zacha, but if somebody, of one of the younger brothers is miskodem, if he preempts, he gets excited, it's a mitzvah opportunity, so then it would work. So basically it's a, if we could put it in terminology that we're normally familiar with, it's lechatchilin b'di'evan. The basic difference between that which is done primarily and that which is done after the fact. Lechatchili should have the older brother doing it. Now again, I'm being careful in terms of the words. I'm choosing older as opposed to oldest, meaning not necessarily the Bechor. Could be that the Bechor is the one who died. But in other words, the older brother is going to do the mitzvah of Yibum, whoever's the oldest of the surviving brothers. But if one of the younger brothers do it, b'di'evan, so that would work. Tanu Rabban, the Gemara quotes a Braisa, and the Braisa over here is going to focus on the Psukim. So before we start with the Braisa, let's familiarize ourselves with the Psukim. We're in Perek Chav Hei and Sefer Dvarim, Parshas Kisei Tzei, and we start with Pasuk Dalet. Sorry, Pasuk Hei. Dalet Zosachtum Shur B'disho. Right, and you remember the Gemara earlier in the Masechta made a connection between the Pasuk Losachtum Shur B'disho and the Parsha of Yibum, if you remember. And in the meantime, however, if two brothers are together, mehem, one of them die. Uvein ein lo, and there's no son, no surviving child. And we learned earlier that it doesn't have to be a son, it could be any child. So this woman cannot go chutzah, she cannot go outside to a quote-unquote a strange man, yavam yavam alaha, but rather the yavam, meaning the brother-in-law, is going to have relations with her, lachala liisha, and take her for a wife, viyibma, and perform yibum. And we mentioned already earlier in the Masechta, that last word in the pasuk, viyibma, is extraneous, and we spoke about that earlier. V'hayaha b'chor asher teled. And now I'm going to translate the pasuk just literally. The simple pshat in the pasuk. Vaya b'chor she'teleid. Now the firstborn child that they give birth to, Yakum Hashem Achiv Hames, he will stand in the place of the dead brother. V'loim Achesh Mami Yisrael, and the name of the and his name will not be obliterated amongst the Jewish people. Okay, this is Parshas Ki Teitze. Kim, I'll speak to you. Ki Teitze. Okay, good. So that's the parsha that describes the mitzvah of Yibum. Now the simple pshat is V'haya Bechor is a description of the first child that's produced after the mitzvah of Yibum. That's a simple pshat in the pasuk. Let's begin. We start with the Gemara Tanu Rabbanan. The Gemara immediately introduces us to a braisa. V'haya Bechor mikan shemitzvos begadol liyabim. So now what we're essentially doing is we are not giving the simple pshat in the pasuk, but this is rather a drush. The Braisa says that the Bechor in reference that's being made reference to over here is a reference to the oldest of the surviving brothers. In other words, if we go back to the Pesukim and we took a look at the Pesukim inside, and again, this is Napsha, but the Gemara says that Vaya Bechor is really connection to the previous Pesuk. So what I'll do now is I'll read the Pesukim as if there was no break between the Pesukim. Yavam Yavam Alaha, the Yavam will have relations with her. Ulakachalo liisha, and take her for a wife. V'yibma v'haya habachor, and yibum will be done by the oldest. Now again, it's not pshat, but that's how the Gemara, that's how the Brice is understanding the pasuk. And from there we learn that the primary obligation is on the bechor, meaning on the oldest of the brothers. Later this morning we're going to be discussing, well, maybe it's only the bechor. Okay, we'll come back to that later on. Shemitzvah begadol liyaben. Asher teleid prat lailanit. She'en yoledes. Asher teleid means there has to at least be a potential of leida. If she is an islander, so then there's no mitzvah of yibum. We've discussed this already a couple times earlier in the Masechta. And then finally, al shem achiv lenachala. And when it says al shem achiv, it means, and again, we're still talking about the yavam, it means that he will stand in the place of his brother. Again, we're not talking here about the child that's born. We're talking about the brother who's doing the mitzvah of yibum. He stands to inherit. He will inherit his brother. So the Gemara says, okay, but what about the simple pshat, which is name the child after the dead brother? Isn't that the simple pshat in the pasuk? Al shem achiv. So nemar kan yakum al shem achiv, and nemar lahal al shem achem yikru benachlasam. So the Gemara says, well, we have a gzeres shava, and the gzeres shava tells us that shem is in reference to nachla. It's talking about inheritance. Mashem amur lahala nachla, af shem amur kan lanachla. So shem is in reference to nachla. So shem over here is talking about inheriting. And again, based on not the simple pshat, but the drush that we're now providing, the next pasuk is not a reference to the child, it's a reference to the brother who's doing the mitzvah of yibum. So number one, he's the bechor, meaning he's going to be the oldest of the brothers who's doing the mitzvah of yibum. And number two, he inherits his brother. All the possessions of the deceased will be inherited by the yavam. And one last point, and that is that the yavam who does the mitzvah of yibum cannot be a sris. In other words, he must have the capability and literally the equipment in order to be able to have a child. And if he doesn't, so then he has no mitzvah of yibum. Okay. Right. Well, the shem. Right. The shem is in reference to the property, and that's right. And the yavam is the one who's going to be receiving all of his deceased brother's property.
So, if the deceased was a bechor.
Right. Okay. Good. Very good. 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 Good question. Stay tuned. It's a little early to ask that question, but that's coming up at the end of this discussion. Amar Rav Afagav Debchol Torah Kula In Mikra Yosef Min Deb Shuta. Rav says, look, as a general rule, we always operate with the pshat. Ein Mikra Yosef Min Deb Shuta. The Torah operates only, not only. That's the wrong way to say it. Let me refresh. Let me do that better. The Torah primarily has a simple pshat to it. And normally, generally, Ein Mikra Yosef Min Deb Shuta. You know, Rashi and Chumash, right, we wrote a parish to Chumash. I feel like we all knew that. So Rashi, I think it's in the third parak of Bereishis. So he says that, look, there's many midrashim, and they're all very good, and they're all very important, but my primary purpose in interpreting the Torah is to give simple pshat, pashut pshat. And he quotes our Gemara of Ein Mikra Yotzei Midei Pshuto. Okay, and his grandson, Rashi's grandson, the Rashbam, so he also wrote a parish on Chumash, and he basically got the same tradition in terms of how to explain the Torah using simple pshat, and he says, I'm going to even give more pshat in the pasuk than my grandfather did. My grandfather sometimes went back to midrashim to explain. He says, I'm going to do this as simply as I can. Okay, so that's simple pshat. So again, so if we read this parsha of Yibam, so the simple pshat is that this pasuk is a reference to the child. The Bechor is a reference to after he marries her, the first child that they have. But now we're not saying simple pshat, we're going to be saying a drush, which is that the Bechor is a reference to the Yavam. So the Gemara says, Hachas, I gzer shava, afikta me pashta legamre. And not only that, but we have gzer shava, which is going to uproot the simple pshat. V'ilav gzer shava, avamin, shem shem amish. So, and if without the drush, I would have thought that the shem is a reference to the actual name itself. Meaning that you have to name the child after the name of the deceased. Okay. Period. Adkan. So we have now a drasha in the psukim that teach us that really the primary responsibility of doing the mitzvah of yibum is the oldest. Although right now we're describing him as the bechor, which we're gonna the Gemara's gonna sit on that point in just a moment. Now Laman Kamazar Rahmana. So Liyavam. So the Gemara says, okay, now that you're telling me that this pasuk is in reference to the yavam, so just grammatically the pasuk doesn't make sense. Yakum Hashem Achicha mi ba'ilei, meaning if this pasuk is directing itself to the yavam, so the pasuk should be saying you're going to take the role of your brother. That's not what the pasuk says. The pasuk says, "V'haya b'chor sheitela yakom al shem achiv," his brother. But wait a second. Didn't we just conclude that this pasuk is a reference to the Avim himself? So, "Ila beidin yakom al shem achi aviv mibaylei." And if the pasuk is here directed to the Beis Din, so then the pasuk should read not achiv, but rather al shem achi aviv, the brother of his father. V'dilma achi kamerlu rachman la Beis Din. So the Gemara says no. Maybe grammatically the pasuk would work, and maybe we're talking primarily to Beis Din, and basically the instructions are as follows: Amru le'liyavam. You, Beis Din, are going to go over to the Avim and ensure and make sure that Yakom Hashem Achiv, that he takes his brother. Okay? So in other words, grammatically, the pasuk does work out under the assumption that the Torah's directive is really at the Beis Din to ensure that the surviving brother, specifically the oldest of the surviving brothers, do the mitzvah of Yibam with his brother. Okay. Now once again we have the Gzereshava, which removes the pshat away from the pasuk, and again it's a reference to the Yavam, not to the child that's born. So now the Gemara says, okay, now that we know that this pasuk is talking about the Yavam and the description of the Yavam, not the child that's going to be born, so the Gemara says, let me make a couple suggestions. Suggestion number one, says the Gemara, maybe, when is there a mitzvah of Yibam? Only if there's a Bechor. Okay? Meaning that if there's no Bechor, there's no mitzvah of Yibam. Right? And now it's a very reasonable suggestion considering the fact that this pasuk of Ahaya Bechor is in reference to the actual Yavam himself. So maybe he's the only one with the responsibility and obligation to the mitzvah of Yibam. And if there's no Bechor, now the Gemara is suggesting there should be no mitzvah. So the Gemara says, can't be. It's an untenable conclusion. Because we know, we spent the first parak and a good part of the second parak discussing that if I have two brothers who did not live in the word concurrently, they are exempt. The younger brother is exempt from the mitzvah of Yibam. Why would we be talking about exemption? If the mitzvah is only on the Bechor, so we wouldn't need a special pasuk drasha to teach us about the exemption of Eishes Achiv Shelo Hayah Ba'olam. So it's just simply an untenable conclusion. Well, maybe the exclusion over here is, what about Bechor De'ima? Right, let's say it's the firstborn of the mother. So the Gemara says, that's also untenable. Because we know that Yibam is connected with inheritance. And once you talk about inheritance, a Bechor for inheritance is by definition only the father's firstborn. So being the firstborn of your mother is inconsequential as it relates to inheritance. So the Gemara says, well, maybe Bechor is a trigger. Maybe if there's a Bechor, then there's a mitzvah of Yibam. Not only for the oldest, maybe for the younger ones as well. But if there's no Bechor, then there's no trigger, and then there would be no mitzvah of Yibam. So the Gemara says, Amakro, Meisechad Mehem. So the Gemara says, well, no, because the Torah says, and one of the brothers dies. Maybe the Torah is talking about where the oldest one dies and the younger one survives and still there's a mitzvah of Yibam. So the Gemara says again, that's an argument, but you can argue the other direction. Maybe the argument would be that no, the Torah is only speaking specifically about a scenario where the younger brother dies and the oldest one is still survived, and then and only then is there a mitzvah of Yibam. And again, the Gemara backs into that same argument, which this is an ironclad argument. That can't be. There has to be a scenario in which there's a mitzvah of Yibam, even with a younger brother. How do I know that? Very simple. Because of Eishes Achiv Shelo Hayah Ba'olamo. The Torah excludes non-contemporary brothers. Non-contemporary brothers can only be in a scenario where the mitzvah of Yibam is falling on the younger brother. And yet the Torah has to give an exemption. That means that without the Torah's exemption, there would have been an obligation, even though he's only a younger brother. Now the Gemara wonders, okay, let's make another suggestion. Maybe, so what's, why is the Torah spell out Bechor? Maybe because if there's a Bechor, he not only does he get first right, but he gets first rights to the exclusion of the other brothers. Meaning that if there's a Bechor, now what the Gemara is suggesting is that he has first refusal, right? First right of refusal, where you go to him and exclusively him, and if he says no, then and only then do we go to the other brothers. But meanwhile, we know that's not true. We know that the way the Mishnah describes it is that if there's an older brother, you ask him first, but if one of the other brothers comes and preempts, so Zacha, our Mishnah says it works. What the Gemara now is suggesting is maybe he shouldn't. Maybe he has exclusivity, and only until he says no, then and only then, are the other brothers given an option. And the Gemara debunks that as well. And the Gemara says no, because the Pasuk says, Ki Yeshu Achim Yachdav, which means that they're all on the same footing. They all have the same availability, the same rights to be Kona the Yavam. Again, we'll ask as a sequence, we'll ask the oldest one before the younger ones, but in terms of the rights, they all have this equal rights. So the Gemara says, okay, but now let's make the following proposal. So the Gemara made a number of strong proposals, which the Gemara rejected one after the other. Again, let's just quickly review. The Gemara proposed that maybe if there's a Bechor, there's a mitzvah. If there's no Bechor, there's no mitzvah. The Gemara rejects that. Maybe the Gemara means that if there's a Bechor, he has exclusivity, and only when he says no, then the other brothers, and only then the other brothers have an option. The Gemara rejects that as well. So now the Gemara makes a much more modest proposal. The Gemara is now suggesting that if there's a Bechor, he gets first right, and if there's no Bechor, so then all bets are off, and then all the remaining surviving brothers, even though obviously there's a pecking order in terms of who's older and who's younger, but maybe at that point in time, Kol Da'alim Gavar, right? Not exactly, but whoever's quicker, Kol Hazar is Kadam. Meaning then basically we would say it's a foot race. So the Gemara says that's also going to be rejected. Alamatini Abai Kashisha, mitzvah begadol liyabim. The mitzvah's with the gadol, which, quite frankly, that's the same thing our Mishnah said. But again, over here, it doesn't say Bechor, it simply says gadol. Meaning of the surviving brothers, whoever's the oldest, he gets first rights.
Why did the Pasuk say that?
Right, then, correct. Meaning without the Torah Shebaal Peh, we would not have said any of this. Right, the Gemara acknowledged that in the beginning. Meaning the Pasuk shot in the Pasuk over here doesn't give any such indication. It's only because we're saying that the Bechor, Vahaya Bechor, is a reference to not the child, but rather the surviving brother. Agreed. So mitzvah begadol yabim, l'ratza hochen etzal achiva katan. And now if the older brother doesn't want to do it, so then we go to the younger brother. L'ratza hochen etzal gadol, I'm sorry, etzal gadol. And if the younger son says, no, thank you, so then we go back to the gadol and say, look, you have the primary responsibility, you're the oldest of the surviving brothers, you therefore, I know you said no, but now you have to reconsider, now you have to say yes. By the way, yes could also mean he could do chalitza, but in other words, but he's the one ultimately responsible for either yibum or chalitza. Okay, so it's from this braisa, so also an indication is given that this is not just when there's a bechor, but as long as it's just simply an older brother, he's the one who's primarily responsible. So kibachor ma bechor bechor aso garmalo af gadol gadol aso garmalo. So the Gemara says, and how do I know that? Because in this particular case, he's like a bechor. Meaning that when there's a Bechor in the family, a firstborn son in the family, so that's a status. Why? Because he's the oldest of the family. In the case of Yibum, Gedula so. The fact that he's now the oldest surviving brother, that also gives him a status. What in this case status means? That he's the one primarily responsible slash obligated to do the mitzvah of Yibum. Ve'ema. Now the Gemara suggests. Another suggestion of the Gemara. Maybe the Torah pinpoints the Bechor to teach us that when he does the mitzvah of Yibum, he's going to be entitled to the inheritance of his brother, but when he does not do the mitzvah of Yibum, he's entitled to no inheritance. In other words, if another brother does Yibum, no Nachla. So the Gemara says, Amakra Yakum Hashem Achiv, V'arei Kam. The Gemara says, no, because go back to the beginning of this whole discussion. The Pasuk said, shame. We understood shame to me a reference to Nachla. We had a Xerishava earlier this morning that taught us that shame is Nachla. And therefore, anyone who does the mitzvah of Yibum is entitled to the shame, which means inheritance. Vare kam. Ve'ela bechor de kayurachmana lamai hilchasa. So the Gemara says, okay. So now essentially what we have learned over the course of this entire discussion is that really what we mean is that when the Torah says Vaya Bechor, again it's not referring to the child, even though that's a simple pshat, but rather it's referring to the surviving brothers, and the oldest is the one that's going to do Yibum. And now what we're saying is it's not really Bechor, it means really Gadol. It means the oldest of the surviving brothers, even though he's not necessarily the Bechor. Could be that the Bechor died, could be the firstborn son was not a son, but a daughter. However it is, he's not the Bechor. As long as he's a Gadol, he now has that primary obligation. You ask him first. If he says no, then you turn to the other brothers. The other brothers say no, you go back to him, and he's the one who's primarily responsible. That is what we've been saying up until now. At this juncture, at this point in time, now the Gemara is going to ask such a simple question. So why are you throwing around the term Bechor? Right. So when all is said and done, the Torah should have said something more in lines with Gadol, right? The oldest of the brothers. But now we're saying Bechor. And so in what aspect does this have anything to do with the halachas of Bechor? So the Gemara says, Lamai Hilchasa, that is the Gemara's question now. We're on the top of Chavdal Medbeis. Ligre Usa. So the Gemara says, actually, it works against him. In what respect? Ma Bechor eno notal baraika b'mochsak, av hai eno notal baraika b'mochsak. So first let me go over the halacha regarding a Bechor, and then we'll translate it over here. The halacha regarding a Bechor is as follows. We know that a Bechor gets pishnayim. Okay? So in other words, whatever the assets are at the time of the death of the father, so the Bechor is going to get twice as many as any of the other brothers. As a simple algebraic expression, so let's say there are four brothers, so you take the estate, and let's say the estate is X, and instead of dividing in four, divide into five, and the oldest brother is going to get 2X of all the other brothers. Okay? So that's the formula in terms of how a Bechor is going to get his double portion. So far, so good. The halacha is regarding a Bechor, Rashi quotes the Gemara. It's based on a drasha, again going back to the beginning of Parshas Ki Tse, where it's true that the brother is going to get two times more than the other brothers, but only of assets that are currently in the estate. Meaning, if there is any account receivable in the estate, right, just to use a modern bond, let's say an invite, which was at this point in time uncollected. Now, that's obviously still an asset. That's obviously still part of the estate, but in terms of accounting for the pishnayim that's received by the Bechor, his pishnayim is only going to be accounted against those assets that are currently in the estate. And the account receivables are not factored into the double portion received by the Bechor. Okay? That's the halacha by Bechor in terms of figuring his pishnayim. What the Gemara now is saying is, in that regard, obviously that means, you know, it's a greyusa. I mean, the Gemara says it. It's like greyusa. And obviously, it doesn't help him. It hurts him financially. In that regard, we're going to say the same halacha is true regarding the Yavam. The Yavam is going to do the mitzvah of Yibum. He is also now entitled to the inheritance, even though he's entitled to the inheritance. And generally speaking, inheritance means you get all the assets. In this regard, he is not going to be getting all these assets. He's only going to get only cash on hand.
What happens to the rest?
Now, here's where it gets a little bit tricky. Now, we're saying now, and we've been saying now throughout this discussion, that the Yavam, when he does the mitzvah of Yibam, he's going to inherit the brother. Meaning, let's speak it out. So what exactly does it mean that he's going to be receiving the inheritance of the brothers? Let's take a look at Rashi over here, the last Rashi in this whole discussion. It's the second Rashi in this Amud. And Rashi says, Bechor in an hotel. So Rashi says, Chelik Bechor benachla haru'uy lavo lahem achar misas avihem. Rashi says over here, we're talking about the inheritance that will come upon the death of the father. Meaning, let's put out a simple example. Let's have Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. Okay? Three brothers. Reuven dies. Shimon now does a mitzvah of Yibum. Okay? Nice and simple. And now Shimon does a mitzvah of Yibum. The way Rashi is describing it is as follows. Shimon not only will receive his portion of the Nachla when dad dies, Shimon is also going to be receiving Reuven's portion of the Nachla when dad dies as well. Meaning that when he does the mitzvah of Yibum, this is fascinating. When he does the mitzvah of Yibum, so right. In other words, not only is he Shimon, but in terms of Nachla, he's also Reuven as well.
He gets a double portion.
Right.
Right.
So just wait. I'm just presenting it as Rashi is presenting it. So Ella Bamasha. I'm sorry. And in this regard, says Rashi, even though Shimon is going to be receiving Reuven's end of the inheritance, but he's only going to be receiving it like a Bechor receives his double portion, and that he's only going to be receiving assets that are currently in the estate and no account receivable. Right? Any incoming money that has not yet been collected, does not factor in to this type of division. So that means then, it's a little complicated, okay? But that's accounting in general. So, but that means then, that when, this is the way Rashi is describing it, when Da dies, so what we're going to do now is we're going to do an accounting of all assets currently on hand. Shimon's going to be receiving a portion of his portion of that, plus Reuven's portion of that. And then any unrealized assets, so those are going to then be equally distributed amongst the surviving brothers. That's the way Rashi seems to be describing it. So when the Yavam receives the double portion, now the Yavam receiving double portion, again, double portion because he's receiving his portion and he's receiving his brother's portion. So again, he's only going to be receiving only those monies that are on hand, but nothing, and no unrealized assets.
So when Reuven dies, everything goes to...
Yeah, so it's interesting.
Two sets of assets.
Correct. Very good. The way Rashi's presenting it, Rashi's focusing on the assets that are coming from dad down, yeah, you know, to the brothers.
Right.
Correct. What Rashi over here is not describing is Reuven's assets and where that's going to. Now, from Rashi's perspective, I'm not sure. I'm unclear.
It's possible that Reuven's assets goes to the dad first.
It's absolutely... Right, it's absolutely possible. And look, there's another number of other permutations that's not being described over here. Meaning, what if dad is already dead? And now, it's just, you know, it's Reuven died, and there are surviving brothers. So what then becomes of his estate? Is that entire estate going to be taken over by Shimon? And we can then follow up the question with, and does he get also not only the realized assets, but does he get the unrealized assets as well? That's at this juncture, meaning based on just the Gemara and Rashi, I don't know. I'm unclear about that. Okay, good. There are more details to flesh out. But the basic idea, let's just go over the basic idea and then we're going to go on in the Gemara. But the basic idea is that, yes, it's true that the oldest brother is going to be taking over Reuven. Basically, both in terms of he's going to marry his wife, he's going to inherit him, and why do we describe Shimon as being a Bechor? So the Gemara says in one regard, and that is that when he receives the inheritance that would have gone to Reuven, but now it's redirected to him, he's going to be receiving it like a Bechor receives his double portion, and that he's only going to be receiving assets that are currently on hand, and nothing unrealized. No, the account receivables are not counted in this distribution, and only afterwards, then the account receivables are going to be equitably distributed amongst the surviving brothers.
Okay. So who gets the inheritance in case of a chalitza?
No, meaning that it certainly sounds like if Chalitza is done, he does not get it. It's only when he's come, only when he stands in the place of his brother, then and only then.
Then you
go to the normal distribution.
Whoever
the pecking order is. The Gemara Baba Basra.
Yavama doesn't get anything.
End of the Masechta. Huh?
Yavama doesn't get anything yourself.
This is just talking about the brothers. And what the brothers are, the entitlements of the brother and their distributions. Yeah.
So what would that put a big monkey wrench in?
No, because then again, anyone who does the mitzvah of Yibum now is receiving that entitlement, meaning whoever's kam, that's how we understood the pasuk. Whoever takes the place also receives the shame, and the shame is a reference to the nachla. So, right. It definitely incentivizes the mitzvah. That's correct. Providing a small financial incentive. Obviously, it's only based on whatever assets are had. Okay. I apologize. I didn't look it up.
Why did they have to do all this drasha here when they can look at Bereishis and you have Yehuda and Tamar?
Can I tell you something that's it's funny you mentioned that. I'll just raise it very quickly. There's a Rashi in Vayeshev, and it's a very strange Rashi. So Rashi says, I'll read the Rashi inside, out of the Chumash here. So Rashi says, Yehuda gave Yehuda gave Tamar over to his first son. He died. Then he turns to Onan, and he says, okay, mitzvah. You have the midbright mitzvah of Yibam. So, Vayomer Yehuda Lonam Bo Aleshet Achicha V'Yabe Mosa V'Hakim Zer LaAchicha. Okay, in other words, continue the legacy of your brother. Take a look at Rashi over there. So Rashi says V'Hakim Zera HaBen Yikare Al Shem HaMeis. The son will be called after the dead person. That's Rashi over there on the story of Yehuda and Er and Onan, and Ramban over there says. Did you just see today's daf? Meaning, right there. Basically, the Ramban says right there on that pasuk. Ramban says, "Did you see today's daf?" Meaning that's not the conclusion. That we don't go with the pasuk shot of the pasuk. We go with the drush and it's, what's Rashi doing over there on that pasuk? Okay, and another point that Ramban made that very point. The Ramban, take a look at the Ramban right there on that pasuk. Lamed Ches Zayin. So Ramban says, and we see that Yehuda didn't name the kids after the dead brothers. Okay, it's a difficult Rashi.
Well, Yehuda, if there is no brothers, just the son, the father is supposed to be evil or no?
No, meaning no. After Torah was given, no. That's no. No. Those are all the Arias. Okay, let's go next topic for today. Okay, now again we've seen this. We basically covered this topic not that long ago. In Moed Katan, and yes, we're going to get to revisit a topic that we've covered recently. And I know it's strange because you're not allowed to speak Lashon Hara, right? One of the Yisurim in the Torah speak Lashon Hara, and so we're going to be talking a lot about rumors and allegations regarding a person and his behavior. Okay, now if we all follow the laws of Lashon Hara well, I know it's immensely challenging, but if we all follow the laws of Lashon Hara well, so then people wouldn't be speaking and there would be no rumors. Okay. Just to give a little more context to this whole discussion, one, it's true that one is not allowed to speak Lashon Hara, but you are supposed to, again, I'm super oversimplifying, but you are supposed to protect other people from pitfalls and dangers. And if you know that a person behaves in a certain way, if you know that one behaves in a certain way and they're about to make a shidduch with somebody else, so then there is an obligation to protect the other party. So there are times when you're supposed to, I don't want to say spread a rumor, but you're supposed to share information with other people. So again, I know the whole discussion we're about to have is strange in that no one should be spreading the rumors, no one should be talking, but, okay, that's, I'm just showing awareness that it is strange, this whole discussion. But let's begin. Why... I guess an overarching question is why are we discussing it right now, right? In other words, we're in the middle of Yevamos. We're in the second parak of Yevamos. We just got finished discussing the oldest who should be doing the mitzvah of Yibam, meaning we've been handling classic Yibam scenarios. And so why not? Why this now? So if you remember, the previous Mishnah described a scenario where if a marriage was done, so ein motzi miyadam. In other words, even though the marriage is not lichatchila should not have been performed. But once it's done, it's done. So now this Mishnah, one of the last Mishnahs in the second parak of Yevamos, is going to be describing other scenarios where the marriage shouldn't have happened, but it happened, and so under certain circumstances, it can be sustained. So let's see it all inside. Hanitan al shifcha v'nishtachra. So let's say a man is alleged to have relations with a shifcha. Shifcha kananis, as we learned just the other day, Jew is not allowed to marry a shifcha kananis. Every Ivri is allowed to, but under certain circumstances. But a Jew cannot marry a shifcha kananis. rumors were reported that this man had relations with the Shifcha Kananis, and then she was freed. Freedom for the Shifcha Kananis means she becomes a full-fledged Jew. So now he has the right to marry her. Or does he? Or another case, says the Mishnah, is a non-Jew. Man's reported to have relations with a non-Jewish woman. So hareze lo yichnos. So the halacha is he should not marry her. Because what that marriage will do is substantiate all those rumors. And I don't mean to be gruff, but and so what? We don't go, okay, the rumors were substantiated. So stay tuned, the Gemara is going to ask that very question. Now if they do get married, we're not going to force a divorce between these two, but they should. A man is purported to have relations with a married woman. So now the rumors and allegations over here is adultery. So vehotzi uha, and based on this, I'm going to give you now what is a simple pshat of the Mishnah. They forced a divorce. Now the they over here is probably a reference to Beis Din. So they forced a divorce. In such a circumstance, now, if the adulterer ends up marrying her, at that point, Beis Din says, uh-uh. In other words, this marriage is not a sanctioned marriage, and Beis Din is going to force a divorce. Okay. Much to discuss over here. Let's begin. So the Gemara says, first of all, the conversion is good. Right? That was clear from the Mishnah. Meaning the Mishnah totally blew past that point, and was just now operating on the what happens after she converts. But the conversion is good. Or remaining, the Gemara says, but here's what I'm bothered by. Somebody converts because they fell in love. Or converting would mean that he would walk into a lot of money. Okay, doesn't always work. L'shem avdei shlomo. Or let's say you're going to become a servant to Shlomo. Or Shlomo HaMelech. Meaning, it'll be financially beneficial. Einam gerim divrei Reb Nechemya. Shai Reb Nechemya Omer, Echa Geir Arayos, Echa Geir Chalomos, Echa Geir Mordechai Ve'Esther. Einam gerim. So according to the Tana Rebbe Nechemya, it is not a geiris. It doesn't matter if it was forced by lions. We're talking over here about the Kutim. And it doesn't matter if it was forced by a dream. Right? Somewhere in a dream somebody said to him in a dream, you need to convert. Oh, he wakes up and sweating. Okay. No good, says Reb Nechemya. Geri Mordechai Ve'Esther. Right? The Pasuk says at the end of the Megillah. Right? Mit Yahadim. A lot of people converted. Einam Gerim. They're all unaccepted converts. Achi Yigar Bizmanazeh. Unless they convert now in today's day, which the Gemara immediately clarifies. Bizmanazeh Sakadach Elema Kibizmanazeh. It has to be like these times. Jews are not living large. Becoming a Jew is not intrinsically, or I should say rather extrinsically, right? It's not superficially beneficial. The only reason why a person would convert nowadays is because he's legitimate, he's sincere. So that's the opinion of Rabbi Nechemya. So the Gemara is bothered by a very simple question. Let's go back to our Mishnah. So a man had, again, purported relations with a non-Jewish woman. She then converts. Before we even get on to any further halachic discussion, why aren't we calling into question the conversion? So the Gemara says, the answer says, the Gemara is very simple. We reject the position of Rabbi Nechemya. Okay, that's it. Meaning, he's a Tana, and most Tanaim argue, and we don't accept his opinion. So the Gemara says, okay, so the conversion's good. Okay, so now what's the problem? Meaning, so a man was purported to have relations with a non-Jewish woman. Okay, she converted. We're saying now the conversion is good. Okay, so now why can't he marry her? So the Gemara says, Mishum deravasi, dama ravasi, haser mimcha ikshos peh, velazus fasayim. Pasuk and Mishle says, do not become the object of other people's conversations. Meaning, it's a midos issue. Is there a halachic problem with marrying a woman who converted? No. Even if you acted totally inappropriately, and you had relations with her as a non-Jew, and then she converted, and the halacha is the conversion is good. Okay. Marrying her from a halachic standpoint is not a problem, evidenced by the fact that if you marry her, bidi evid, the marriage is not going to be dissolved, Beis Din is not going to step in. All that's true, But what happens now is that you become you put a bullseye on your back, and now you become a point of derision, of mockery, of lazus fasayim. People will be speaking ill about you. Don't behave in a way where you become the center point of other people's conversations. Okay. So basically, it's a midos issue. Tana Rabbanim Mekabim Gerim Limos HaMashiach. We're not going to accept Gerim Limos HaMashiach. And so, in other words, get in now. Because, I mean, that's not true, but... But Bizman HaMashiach, it's not going to happen. They did not accept Gerim during the times of Davin and Shlomo. I'm Rabbi Eliezer Maikra, Hon Ger Yagor, Efes, May O.C. The Gemara, of course, a pasuk from Yeshayahu. Geris is good when it's done without me. Meaning, Kadosh Baruch Hu says, when I'm not clearly visible in this world, that's when I want the Gerim to accept their Geris. But mi gar itcha alecha yipol. And then, and only then, do you end up the same fate as the Jews. But if you're Megayer when there's clearly divine revelation, when things are obviously good for the Jewish people, that's not a Geris. Aval idachlo, but at other times it's not a good Geris. Now again, it's a tricky discussion, and I'm super oversimplifying it. Meaning that it sounds like from the Gemara that as a policy, during the times of Davin and Shlomo, no Geris, period. Now again, the Gemara just like 10 lines earlier rejected the opinion of Rabbi Nechemiah, who says that even if a person is converting for ulterior motives, nevertheless the Geris is going to be a good Geris. So again, it's much more complicated than I'm presenting it, in that on one hand the Geris is good, on the other hand as a policy they didn't accept Gerim. Okay, so what happened? If you want to see more about this topic of what they did during the times of Davin and Shlomo in terms of Gerim, the Rambam in Hilchos Ishes, I think somewhere around the 14th parak of the Rambam. So he discusses what this strange policy, not strange, it's understandable, but what would happen if somebody converted during the times of Davin and Shlomo, or for that matter, any time when things are really good for the Jewish people.
So
okay.
How did King Solomon have all his wives?
Yeah, right. That's the Rambam. It's funny, I just quoted the Rambam. The Rambam's starting point for the discussion is exactly your question. So see the Rambam inside where he discusses it. I think the 14th parak of Hilchos Ishes, towards the end of that parak, I think. Okay, anyway, back to the Gemara. We're up to now the next part of the Mishnah. Okay, so the Mishnah describes a scenario where a man is having a purported adulterous affair with a woman. The woman gets a divorce from her husband. The Mishnah says he, the adulterer, cannot marry her. And the Mishnah says, and if he does, Beis Din steps in, and Beis Din says, you will divorce her. Okay. Amar Rav Uve Eidim. So now, caveat says Rav. That's only if there were witnesses who saw the actual act of adultery. Meaning, the Chachamim Beis Din is not going to terminate a marriage just based on rumors alone. It has to be that there were Eidim who saw. Now, Amar Rav Sheshes, and Rav Sheshes says, that's very difficult. Right, Rav Sheshes has this line a number of times in the Gemara, which is Rav may have been taking a little bit of a nap when he said that halacha. Now I know that sounds strong. It does sound strong, but basically it's an expression. It just basically means I have such a hard time understanding Rav on this issue. Detanya anitan eshes ishvot si al yaday al yadovin eskar shemitachas yaday acher im kanos lo yotzi. So Gemara says, look, let's take a look at the following brisa. Now, this brisa is very similar to our Mishnah. It's just a little more detail. Again, a man is purported to have an adulterous affair with a woman. The hotziu al yado. So, Beis Din said, okay, enough. In other words, we don't know if she committed adultery, but enough. V'nizgar shemitachas yaday acher. And then she married somebody else. Okay, so let's give names to everybody over here. Okay, Reuven, Shimon, Nachshon. Okay, I only chose those names because those are names that Rashi used. Okay, so again, so Reuven is purported to have relations with a married woman. Let's call her Dina. I did that because Rashi did that. Okay, so Reuven is purported to have relations with Dina. Okay, Dina was married to Shimon. I know why Rashi did that. So Dina was married to Shimon. And okay, and that marriage terminated. And then Dina married another guy. Let's call him Nachshon. And that marriage then ended in divorce. So the Braisa says, Im kanas lo yotzi. If Reuven at that point in time marries Dina, okay. Okay meaning we won't force a divorce. Okay. We're not going to be excited about the marriage. L'chatchila, we're not going to promote it. But if done, then it's done. Now, that's the Braisa. Now, it is obviously interesting and odd. The Braisa paints a drama scenario, right? Daytime drama where at first there was an alleged adultery with Reuven. She divorces Shimon. She then marries another guy. Well, why the extra drama? So the Gemara says, I'll tell you why. Hey, chidami. Idik eidim ki asa achir v'afsika lekala mayhave. So, alalav deleka eidim. Look, it's got to be that there were no witnesses. Because think about it. If there were witnesses to the adultery, it never sanctioned the marriage of Reuven and Dina. Never. We know the halacha is, once somebody is found to have committed adultery with a woman, she's also to her husband and she's also to the paramour, to the adulterer. So if there are witnesses, there's no discussion to be had. It must be that this entire scenario is sans witnesses. Must be. And now we also understand why it is that we need another man to marry her. Why? Because that stops the rumors. Meaning, if in fact she had an adulterous affair with Reuven, then she would have turned to Reuven. The fact that she married another man would seem to indicate that these rumors were not true. I understand that we could present an elaborate scheme where she married Nachshon only to squash the rumors. Okay, we can make it even more dramatic than it already is, but that's why the Braisa has another man involved in the scenario. So, but that means then that had it been that she would have gone straight from Shimon to Reuven, even though it's just a rumor, Basin would have stepped in and Basin would have said to Reuven, we're not sanctioning this marriage, we're forcing you to divorce her. That's what it sounds like from the Braisa. Rav would tell you, I disagree. And the truth of the matter is that even if she would have went straight from Shimon to Reuven, with no Nachshon in between, still the marriage would have been not condoned, but accepted. If there were witnesses who were testifying to the adultery, so then obviously the marriage would be terminated by Beis Din. But if not, marriage will be sustained. And still the point is that lichatchila should not be done, even if she married Nachshon. Still, Reuven's behavior of marrying her would be very unseemly, and lichatchila should not be done. Maybe the Gemara challenges again. Here we have another braisa. And this braisa says that if there are children, when is it true that the marriage will be terminated? When there are no children. But if there are children, lo teitse. I'll explain why in just a moment. Now, if there are witnesses, so then obviously the marriage is going to be terminated. Okay. If she has children from her first husband, and all there are just rumors, so then the marriage between her and her alleged paramour is not going to be terminated, and the reason why is very simple. Because if there were children from the first husband, and we force a divorce... Okay, let's just make this point, and then we'll conclude for today. If there are children from the first marriage, and then based on what to come in and sever the marriage between this woman and her alleged adulterer, that will substantiate that probably, if not definitely. That means that the adultery did in fact happen. It will substantiate the rumors, and then those children are then going to be declared mamzerim. And so therefore, if there are children at stake and the yichus of children at stake, and all there is just rumors, so then the marriage is not, between her and her alleged paramour will not be terminated. Okay. Again now, we'll pause over here, but again, we're in the middle of Rav's position. Rav says that the only way we will terminate the marriage between the woman and her alleged paramour is only if witnesses saw. If witnesses did not see, we're not going to terminate it. And now the Gemara is going to be reflecting on Rav's position and whether or not we accept Rav's position at the end of this discussion. Meaning we'll see this tomorrow. The Gemara will conclude whether or not we accept like Rav or we don't.